What's good, everybody? It's your boy Hans.
And this is Tristan.
Welcome to the Hans and Tristan podcast. Yes, that's right. We're back, guys. Took a little hiatus, but we're back. Just total transparency. The reason for the hiatus was I had a death. So I was grieving and processing and, you know, dealing and taking care of myself. So took some time off from the show. So I feel like as mental health professionals that we are, we need to follow our own advice. And I did just that. So, you know, with today's show, I actually want to be a little even more transparent. And we're going to begin the show talking about grief and suicide. So we're going to jump right into it, Tristan. So the loss was a good friend of mine. For about 12 years, I've known him. And he committed suicide. So it was nonetheless a shock, very shock, came out of nowhere. Matter of fact, it is totally, completely the furthest thing you would think would be his cause of death. Like, that's how shocking. He was very gregarious, very outgoing, comfortable in his own skin, you know, wouldn't hesitate to, you know, put himself out there. You know, I often think that we get lost in somebody who has such an outgoing personality, right? And forget that they too are vulnerable to, you know, issues that affect everyone. Mm-hmm. So I kind of wanted to just spend some time on this to dispel common misconceptions about those who suffer from depression and, you know, those who may think that, hey, you need to identify or present a certain way to be at risk for, you know, suicidal ideations and tendencies. So just some stats, I think 96% of the population has somehow or at some time had a thought about killing themselves, mm-hmm. right? So that goes to show nobody is impervious from that, right? Absolutely. We always question and think about our mortality,
right?
Right. When it comes to being at risk to your health is your mental state when you're contemplating your mortality, what's going on, and also your risk factors, right? What are your risk factors? What are you genetically predisposed to? What risk factors are prevalent in your environment, right? So yep. An environment, physical environment, but also your social environment, which is a type of environment as well. So all those kind of go are factors that present for, you know, when you're assessing your risk factors and, you know, when you're doing an assessment for somebody. So when you're contemplating your mortality, there's a lot that goes with it. Right. So you don't always have to be doom and gloom. You don't always have to present as a loner. You don't always have to present as an introvert, outcast, to be someone who is considered high risk for, you know, self-harm or anything of that. And like I said, my friend was the complete opposite. Wasn't, you know, wasn't shy, would talk to people. Now, granted, he did live alone, but he always went out and socialized with everybody. You know, there were some risk factors present, but, you know, nothing dramatic or big enough to where you would think like, okay, man, this guy is at risk.
Right.
As, you know, our duty here, we always love to educate and inform on the Hans and Tristan podcast. So we say this all the time. We want you guys to stay connected because during these COVID times when there's, you know, high rampant forms of isolations which has caused an uptake in, you know, mental illness and people suffering from depression and all different forms of disease, we think it is pertinent, especially in these times, that you take care of your mental health. As Tristan said off air, we need everyone to be proactive rather than reactive when dealing with your mental health. Absolutely. And I truly and honestly believe with the case of my friend, he was a little reactive, very much so, honestly. So I remember having conversations with him not maybe a month or so ago of him actually seeking out a therapist. So we were talking and, you know, he was like, yeah, you know, I think I'm going to go see somebody. And I was encouraging him. I said, yeah, man, that's great. You know, I'm happy for you. Take care of yourself. You know, make sure you go see somebody. Make sure, you know, you're comfortable with that person. Tell everyone, interview your therapist. Make sure they're a good fit for you. Just because, you know, they're the first person you see or they're financially, you know, in your bracket doesn't mean they're necessarily the best therapist.
It's like car shopping. You got to try different cars and test drives and stuff like that.
Exactly. Exactly. So I was encouraging him, you know, to interview your therapist, make sure you're comfortable with him, make sure you feel like, you know, he's somebody that you can share, you know, the parts that hurt, you know, share the parts that nobody else, you know, really has access to and you feel comfortable and safe. So, you know, he said he found a therapist. It was great. It was going well. So, you know, I'm like, okay, excellent. You know, continuing to encourage him. And I do know he was removed from his family, but he still was connected with them, right? So his family was up north, Maryland, actually. But, you know, he stayed connected with them and would go visit. So none of the earmarks, but yet and still, it came to pass. He took his life. And it was shocking. It is, because it's still heartbreaking, you know, to lose somebody and really just not have the closure that you need, which brings me to the next part when it comes to dealing with grief. So, as you know, as a therapist, Tristan, there's different levels of grief. There's multiple there's multiple ways deaths can happen, and how people react and deal with it vary from person to person because we're all different. But sudden grief, those who are taking away from you at a drop of a dime, are usually typically the hardest ones to deal with because they don't come with that warning.
Right.
And
the also ability to brace yourself.
Exactly. And prepare for that loss. And also they don't give you the benefit of closure.
Right.
So, you know, comparing my loss to somebody who was suffering from a terminal illness, right? Who has time to ease their family into it and come to terms with, you know, what's going to happen is totally different from somebody that you're close to all of a sudden without letting you know, giving you any indication, just taking your own life. That's a another level of grief and another level of processing that you have to do as a person to kind of get through that. And I want to basically kind of share my experience in that, you know, for me, I'm put in a position where, yes, you know, I am very close to that gentleman, but also with my job, I'm also a, you know, a GM. So I have to also be there for my team as well, right?
All right, so while you're grieving, you still got to be there with other people for them while they're grieving.
Exactly. So I have to, you know, not only take care of myself, but also make sure that everybody's okay as well, which is tough. It's not easy. But at the end of the day, though, you know the type of person I am. I'm gonna make sure everybody's okay before me.
Yes, we've had that conversation.
which is not the best thing to do, but you have to take care of yourself, which I took time, which is why, you know, we didn't record for 2 weeks and everything like that. Been kind of dealing and making sure that I'm good and I'm as in a better place, so I can continue to move. So I say all this to say that at the end of the day, when it comes to mental illness, mental health, it's not an exact science. A plus B doesn't always equal C. Mm-mm. It really doesn't. And this unfortunate passing of my friend has been a sobering reminder of that, that nothing is absolute when it comes to mental health, which means we have to really, really make sure we take care of our mental health. We have to invest more time, effort, and energy into making sure that we continue to keep our mental space as healthy as possible. Right. At the end of the day, anything can happen anywhere, anytime, any place. So I'd rather us be proactive and taking care of our mental health rather than reactive. So, you know, if you're out there, one of our listeners, and you've been neglecting your mental health through these times of significant changes, you find that your life has become a little more unstable. You're not handling stress like you used to. You know, you're starting to see your body react physically because mental health affects our physical health. You're Absolutely. Starting to see, you know, physical manifestations that weren't there before. I encourage you to reach out to a mental health professional. It's as easily as going to your primary care physicians. They have a list of referrals that they can go to. It's as easy as going to a website like Psychology Today, putting in your mm-hmm. zip code, seeing the therapists around you. It's really that simple. Take the time to invest in your mental health. Take the time to care for your mental capacity and facilities, because if those are not in order, it really affects how you view the world and how you interact with the world.
Absolutely.
And for those who are grieving, be patient with the process. Grief is not something that can be rushed. It's very process oriented, and it changes day by day. It's not the same. You'll start to see that the way you grieve as the years time goes by, it starts to change as well. So be patient with yourself. Don't isolate yourself too long, but also understand that sometimes you may need that alone time as well. So have that balance of, you know, self-care alone time versus isolation from others. Know the difference between the two.
Yeah.
And really be patient with yourself.
And understanding that even when going to a therapist, therapy only works if you're transparent. Mm-hmm. It only works if you're upfront and you're honest. You know, it's therapy should be definitely be a safe space, and that should be the environment and the energy that you feel when you go to therapy, so you can open up and get the help you need. Because how many times we've had clients and we know they're not being honest with us. We know mm-hmm. they're not being upfront with us, and we have to continue to dig and dig and dig to try to help them get to that level of comfort and help them get to the point where we can actually implement healthy interventions to right. actually, you know, help them, as opposed to, okay, well, you say this is it, but then it's something totally different. So understanding that it's okay to be open and honest about what you need and where you are mentally, physically, and emotionally, and understanding that, like you said, it's like, it's okay. Like, we put on a front all the time. Like, we saw with Robin Williams, and they were like, we're constantly put on a front to be happy, because if you're anything other than that, then you're kind of shunned.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, people don't want to be around someone who's not happy, or who are energy vampires or always complaining. But then on the flip side, it's like, well, how can people really seek help if no one's listening?
Yeah, that's true.
So that we is have true. To be careful with those kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. We have to be careful, like you said, too, of stereotyping others as well. So just because they put on a happy face doesn't mean everything's all good. You know that saying, check in on your strong friends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you really need to check in on everybody regardless of what's going on, and a genuine check-in. Just, hey, you know, just wondering how you're doing. You know, I didn't see anything. I just want to check in to make sure you're good.
Right.
You really are. Like you said, because people often get so good at wearing the mask, right, that they start to believe their own lies. They start to believe their own deceptions, and, you know, facades of who they think they should be. And they buy into that. But the problem is, there's that dissonance that occurs, because who I present is not actually who I am. And it's not actually what I feel most of the time.
Right.
So the dissonance occurs. So then you get that guilt of, okay, am I a liar? Am I putting on a facade? What's going on? You know, who am I? And you have to process all of those things. And people fail to realize that whole on stage, being on stage, you know, terminology is real. We are on stage all the time. Let's be real.
All
the way I am talking with you is not the way I am in a professional setting, is not the way I am with my homeboys. You know, we all have different facets. The issue is when we don't reconcile those different facets, when
right.
we don't connect them and, you know, and understand that they're different parts of us.
Mm-hmm.
The problem occurs is when we feed into one way more than the other and try to make that just us.
Right.
So that's what happens. And, you know, you lead to problematic issues when trauma hits you, when life changes happen. So I do encourage everybody to check in on your social circle, regardless of whether or not you see a sign. Don't wait for something to be wrong to check in with your loved ones. Check in. Encourage everyone to make sure that they're up and up on their mental health, regardless of whether something is wrong or not.
Right.
You go to check-ins for your doctor, nothing's wrong, So go check in with a therapist real quick just to check in. So
it needs to be daily. Like, even with us as individuals, we should do daily check-ins with our mental health, because these are things that fluctuate on a consistent basis, and understanding what affects you. Like for me, like if I watch too much news, I'm like, nope, I see my whole mood shifting and everything else. So understanding what your triggers are, because you're exposed to things on a regular basis and you might not even be aware of the fact that it's affecting you and how you function and how you perceive certain things. So just doing your own individual check-ins every day and just having that self-awareness of what kind of can send you over the edge, and, you know, how to be able to properly handle something, because sometimes your therapist isn't always going to be at your disposal.
Right. No, and that's a fact. So you have to put in the work yourself. The therapist is not going to do all the work. They're going to help you, guide you, figure out what best fits for you and, you know, how you handle things. At the end of the day, you have to be willing to put in the work. And before we move on to the last one, and for those, like I said, with the grieving, just honestly be patient with the process and don't be afraid to reach out for help. For me, I experience grief. And I use it as a metaphor with my clients as well, as waves, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the ocean, waves are not always constant, right? And waves always have different shapes and sizes and everything like that. That's really how grief is. Sometimes you could be chilling and then you're at the kitchen just warming up your food and you're like, oh, man, you. Like, you get what I'm saying? So it really is like that. And I encourage everyone who is grieving to be patient, to understand what works for you, and to also be a little diverse in how you process your grief. Don't just stick to one thing, because as Tristan said, you grow, you change. So just like you check in with yourself mentally as well, check in with how you're processing the grieving and the loss of the loved one, right? Because it shifts. So not everyone is content with just, you know, visiting the grave site for their anniversary, or, you know, gathering pictures or mementos that remind, you know, other times people need to do different things, go to a special place that you guys had a moment in, or, you know, take walks. And you have to figure out what works for you in the moment that you're in, or in the stage that you're in with grieving. And I hesitate to say stage, because grief is not that you reach a stage and it's over. That's not how grief works. That's not how it works. So that's why I hesitate to say stage, but it's really in the moment that you're in with grieving. Because like I said, grieving can change. It can morph into different things. And it can really take a hold of you if you're not, you know, consciously taking care of yourself and cognizant of the process that you're going through. So,
And please, be okay with sitting in those feelings and feel like, we know we don't like to feel feelings because they're icky and they're nasty and they make us, you know, cry and everything else. But what you don't want to do is get in the habit of avoiding those feelings. So soon as you have this thought about the person, you kind of push it out of your mind and out of your head to avoid those feelings, or you go to drink, or you go to smoke, or you go to do whatever to avoid these uncomfortable feelings. And that is like, you're really postponing your grieving process, because you have to get through those, like you said, those little, like, quote unquote phases and everything else to be able to properly grieve. And I think that's what we have to get to as a culture, being comfortable with feelings, being comfortable with being uncomfortable with feelings. And I think that to me would solve so much if, as a culture, we stop trying to push this facade of being strong and not crying. And no, like, it's okay to have moments where you're vulnerable, but we associate vulnerability with weakness, which is why so many people hold shit in. And you know what I mean? I'm gonna tell it, honey. I don't give a damn. If I'm feeling the way, I'm gonna let you know.
Yeah, no, that's so right. And also to add with that, be okay with not fixing. Like, if you're seeing someone who's going through the grieving process and, you know, they're having a tough time, they're crying, just being there.
Yeah.
That's it. You don't have to have the solution for that moment of grief. Just sitting there and acknowledging it and just understanding, like, they're going through something and I'm just going to be right there with them to let them know they're not alone. I'm not here to fix it. I'm not here to change it. I'm just here to be with them. Mm-hmm. I think would also help the culture as a whole as well, because we often want to fix or do something. Yep. So I'll share a little insight. We had the memorial service the other day, yesterday, as a matter of fact, for him. Co-workers, we did something because, you know, he's out of state, so we're not going to be able to attend, you know, the actual service as well. So they had a fire pit, you know, because it was cold outside yesterday, you know, and people were just sharing stories and everything like that. And when I rolled up and everything, they had just finished a prayer and people were crying, people were sharing some stories. And you could kind of see some were trying to share stories to kind of break that silence of that piece. But like, I also purposely myself too, didn't say anything because I know people were looking for me too as well. So I just, no, we need to sit in that moment of silence. We need to understand that with those great stories of his memory and his personality and his love comes this also feeling of we lost someone great as well.
Yeah.
So we need to be able to sit with that along with the great memories as well, because they're together. They all come hand in hand. They all come together. So it's great that you said that. And also those who were there to support the loved one as well. Like I love that they were just there too, just offering just a shoulder to lean on, a shoulder to cry on, and not, you know, trying to, hey, you know, just think about the good times. No, like, no, I want to think about just this loss, like it's this loss. So I think that along with what you said about, you know, us allowing people to be vulnerable, us allowing people to have a moment of just crying, of you know, just hurt and pain, and not, you know, extending it or generalizing it to them being weak or unstable, and to go with us being there, present with them, and not trying to fix or put a band-aid under feeling would go great, would help us honestly be more emotionally healthy in the long run. It really would.
Yeah, emotional intelligence is definitely lacking in society today, unfortunately.
Definitely. So guys, moving on from this little downer, bluey, but it needs to happen. We're going to move on to another topic in entertainment news. So while I was gone, apparently a lot has transpired in the world of entertainment and social media. And I'm going to let Tristan lead this. This is her area of expertise. I know, so what's going on, Tristan, with your homeboy? Tilt.
You know how I feel about Tia. Don't even get me started. So anyway, you know, I'm doing what I do on social media, minding my business and everybody else's business too. So I'm scrolling through, and this girl named Sabrina, her handle is The Glam University. And I've been following her for some time because she also has like a hemp farm where she grows cannabis, you know, things like that. And she also mass produces it. And she does this like woman empowerment and other business aspects or whatever. So I'm presuming she was cool with Tiny and T.I. at some point. I didn't know that because I don't follow Tiny nor T.I., but I follow her because, you know, I be loving my business pages. And then her handles and stuff be all pink. So I'm like, oh, pink, you know, catches my eye. So anyway, she posted something saying that T.I. pulled a gun out on her, like in front of her kids, like pulled a gun out on her and put a gun to her head or whatever. So she goes further into the story saying that I guess they were at a child's birthday party and the assistant was, I guess, treating Tiny like shit. So she jumped in, tried to defend Tiny. Her and assistant got into a physical altercation and T.I. pulled a gun and put a gun to her head. Now, I've heard many a story about T.I. pulling guns out on females. Sadly, I've heard a few stories. You know, here in Atlanta,
really?
I've always heard so many stories about T.I. thugging out females. That's why I really don't like, really, ew. Like, to me, I'm just like, bruh, don't be so quick to thug out females. Like, bruh, if you really about them streets, you got a whole wife and you got a daughter. Like, let them handle your light work, supposedly. But why are you jumping in, like, being physically violent with females? But that's neither here nor there. So anyway, she goes on to tell the story or whatever. And people are kind of giving her backlash. Like, well, you got into a physical altercation, da, 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 da. But me and how I was raised, men don't jump into females' beef. That's just me. That's how I was raised. If females are beefing, dude, you a whole man. Why are you jumping into this? But again, you know, code of the streets, that's how I was raised. Anyway, so this is where it gets juicy. So
she get to your mortgages. There's more tea.
Oh, that wasn't that tea wasn't even hot, honey. That wasn't even
okay. We get into the real
Dre.
Okay.
Then she starts posting all these comments on her IG story, how people are inboxing her, telling her all these stories about Tiny and T.I. Yeah, I met them at the, you know, strip club in Magic City, and you know, they invited me back to their house, and first thing they did, take the phone. They take your phone, and then they offer you Coke or Molly. And, you know, if you deny it or say, nah, I'm good, then Tiny gets irate. And, you know, if she becomes physically aggressive, blah, blah, blah. So they're pretty much coercing you into taking these drugs and things of that nature. And all these stories have the same pattern. All the stories have the same pattern. Tiny comes up and approaches the girl, whether it's a strip club in L.A., strip club at, you know, CIAA, wherever it is. Or, you know, she'll come up, she'll approach a girl, she'll invite them back to the house or the hotel. They'll take their phones. They'll, you know, have them do Coke or Molly or whatever the case may be. And then they pay them afterwards. And then they send them on their way. And girls, like, their stories are just crazy, right? Like, one girl was like, T.I. was like, oh, well, can I put Coke on my penis and have sex with you? It's like, what? Wow. Like, it's like, this is utterly ridiculous, right? So, and these are not just one or two stories. It gets up to, like, 30 different stories.
Mm-hmm.
She's just reposting them, you know, because people are now inboxing her or whatever. And she is like, okay, well, we got a lawyer involved. We got, you know, so she's having all these different people because she's like, well, I didn't think me telling my story about T.I. and Tiny would get to the point where now other people are coming out and saying all these different things about them. And it was utterly ridiculous. So, of course, Tiny posted something saying, oh, well, he was just uncle 2 years ago, but now all of a sudden he's this and this or whatever. So I'm like, and then they start posting the girl Sabrina, the one who came out with the initial story, saying, posting like, you know, restraining orders against her and everything else. And to me, I feel like this, fuck Sabrina, right? And no shade, but you cannot deny these 30 women who have the same story over the last like 6, 7, 8 years.
Right.
About the taking my phone, and if I wanted to leave, you not giving my phone back, and when I say I don't want to do drugs, you get irate and Tiny tries to fight me and all this other shit. Like, you, like, they're really like cutting, like, it's the same blueprint over and over and over, but how it ends is different. Sometimes it ends with the girl passing out, finding out that someone else had sex with her that she didn't consent to having sex with and all this other stuff. So I'm like, yo, to me, all right, yeah, you mad at Sabrina. Now you're trying to, you know, post, oh, you had issues with her in restraint order. But what about all them other 30 females? What about all them other women?
Mm-hmm.
As my mama say, everybody can't be lying. Everybody can't be lying.
Right. No, like, this is wild. And it's wild on multiple levels. So like you said, so just even with the beginning part of it where, you know, she shared that she had an experience where T.I. held a gun to her head, right? So even just wrapping your head around that, and then you move on to where, you know, multiple women are coming out and sharing their stories of what happened with her and her posting it and everything like that. It just starts to snowball into a different other things. And I think what it is, though, when it comes to social media too, it's hard to digest that in social media, right? So it's like, you kind of got to sit back and break it down, like you said, and seek out different patterns of behavior. And I think that's where oftentimes people in social media lose sight. They get fixated on certain details. Yep. And details, yes, people often do lie about details. Certain details can be true. Certain details can be lied about. But what we often need to do, right, is pull back and see, minus the details, what bigger patterns are present and problematic, right? And I hate to tie these two because I don't believe these two are the same, but R. Kelly, right? When you talk about the different women who share their experience, of course, there's varying details, right? Mm-hmm. The details are not the same, but we found out there was a pattern of behavior that was specific. There was a pattern of behavior that was just the same. It was a kind of like a foundation through his deviance, right? There is definitely a foundation and a pattern that he stuck to, a formula, you would say, that he had. And I think what happens in social media, or at least what I'm seeing from the story that you're telling me, is oftentimes people get caught up in the details, right? Yep. And the variances with the detail, but they're not realizing the bigger patterns that are developing. There right. And for me, from what I'm seeing, the bigger patterns are, and I hate it because honestly, the world that we're in and what our culture, Black culture, hip hop culture is what I'm referencing right now, allows in, clouds a lot of things, right? Especially when it comes to consent, because consent always comes up, especially when you're in the world of doing Molly, coke, or right. those high drugs.
But you get consent what I'm saying? And coercion are two different things. And I think that's what I'm realize.
Right.
And you can't consent to shit if you're under the influence.
Exactly. So it's like, you know, it people often misconstrue the two, and we always have to step back and figure out, no, if this happened, you know, under this influence of the substance, that's not consent. You get what I right. mean? And there's also a difference between consenting using a substance versus consenting to have sexual contact, intercourse, or whatever. Right. Those two are not one and the same. So therefore, if I consent to using Molly, coke, or what have you, that doesn't mean I automatically consent to having sex with you or doing right. everything like
or
that.
Or even, let's flip it, even if I consent to having sex with you, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean I consent to having sex, I mean, or doing Molly or whatever case may be, and then you're only giving me the like alcohol and the drugs and everything else to lower my inhibition so you could do whatever you want to me. And that's mm-hmm. the sad part, because just because you consent to having sex with someone doesn't mean you consent to all the other things they choose to do to you after the right. fact. And that's why I tell people all the time. It's like, and people need to understand, just because someone is a sex worker, whether it's a stripper, prostitute, whatever, doesn't mean you have the right to degrade them in that realm.
Right. And I think that distinction needs to be made even clearer when we're seeing, because this is shocking, but it's not too shocking. Does that make sense? It's not outside of the realm of stories we heard before about celebrities and, you know, what they do behind closed doors. And don't get me wrong, do what you do. I'm not here to cast any aspersions or judgment on your sexual life. Or as your boy T.I. said, I'm not out here trying to open the doors of your bedroom at all.
Right.
What I find concerning to me is the questions of consent.
That's what I find concerning
because honestly, I'm not surprised that they have threesomes, foursomes. I'm not surprised mm-hmm. that Tiny goes out and brings other women or anything like that. Mm-hmm. That happens. That's not outside of the norm from what we've seen right. in terms of sexual activity. But what does bring me pause and concern, though, is that there are multiple questions of consent.
There you go.
That to me is what brings me pause.
It's like your intention. Like, one, you take my phone, right? You're taking my phone, and then when I'm saying I want to leave, you're not giving me my phone back. You're keeping my phone because you know I'm not going to leave without my phone. And then on top of that, if I don't want to do the drugs, then you become aggressive. And to me, again, that's coercion. Like, all these multiple levels of things, no, I'm no longer a willing participant at this point.
Right.
And the fact that they can't see that, and I tell people all the time, it's like, you know, if men aren't the only predators out here, women are predator too. Like, they recruit too. They make it a lot easier because they feel like, oh, well, I'm a woman, you're a woman, let me come. You know what I'm saying? And it becomes such a fucking slippery slope. And to me, it gets to a point where it's like, you can't say, oh, well, they all consented. No, this is, again, not even if you didn't drug them. Your influence alone adds to the coercion of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you know this, which is why you're doing it.
There's a power dynamic that's not equal there
at all. And again, I'm not surprised because all the stories we've heard about him and Tiny and hell, how he treat his daughters. So I'm like, no one is so obsessed with someone's hymen unless you out here just being reckless your damn self. And I said all the time, like he is showing his trauma because of shit he's done. And now it's oozing out on his kids. And here we go. So you have, and on top of that, what makes it even worse, you have so many people who are like, well, they're strippers. Well, you went over there to fuck. Well, you, and I'm just like, yeah, just because I go somewhere to have sex with someone doesn't mean they can fucking dog me out. Yeah. That doesn't mean that they can treat me any fucking kind of way they want. That doesn't mean that you can get me high and drunk and then pass me around the fucking room. That doesn't mean that.
Yeah, and it goes to, well, people don't understand the true level of consent. When I consent, right, I don't consent to allowing you to do any and everything. Does that make sense? So People forget that. Like, so yeah, so even if it's like a straight up booty call, right? So let's say y'all texting or whatever, and it's like, yo, it's about to go down. Like, yeah, yeah, I'm trying to do this or whatever. Yeah, but that doesn't mean, like you said, I consent to you giving me alcohol, you to giving me drugs. No, 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 that's not what I consented to. You get what I'm saying? So I do appreciate you making that clear, because oftentimes people think, oh, well, they consented to, you know, to smashing anyway, so what's the problem? No, the problem is they wanted to be conscious and know what was going on.
Right, I want to make an informed decision. And right. I got an even better example for you. Like, even as a female, you find yourself in situations where, like, yeah, I consent to have sex with you. I consent to have protected sex with you. Now, in the middle of sex, you choose to take the condom off without telling me. I did not consent to that.
Right.
So I no longer consent to this sexual encounter at this point.
Exactly.
Because now you're doing things without my permission that I didn't say was okay.
Mm-hmm. Without my informed meaning I'm knowing exactly what's happening.
There you go. There you go.
So yeah, no, that does give me pause though, because like I said, wasn't surprised about, you know, what was going on sexually or whatever. Live your life, do you. What I am concerned about though is that consent is being questioned. And that to me gives me pause, because at the end of the day, as an adult, right? Like, and as somebody who puts himself, you know, if you're presenting yourself as a family person and, you know, and as wanting to make sure you take care of our people, especially our people of color and our women of color, like your actions need to follow suit with that as well. So I do think though, that there has to honestly be a conversation that needs to be had in regards to the questions of consent. Because don't get me wrong, like I said, people point out the details. Yes, there's always going to be a few people who lie about it. There really are. There are people who literally jump on that and say, yes, it happened to me, and you never met T.I. a day in your life. You get what I'm saying? Right. Yes, but those oftentimes don't represent the majority of what's happening, especially when those numbers get to as high as they do. You get what I mean? So understand that you have to fall back and see it bigger. Get away from the details. See the bigger patterns, the bigger questions that are being asked, meaning when these things go down, is consent informed? Is everybody on the same page? Does everybody know what's going on? Does everybody know the plan? And yeah, that's exactly what's in question, because I'm not surprised phones being taken up. Celebrities do that all the time. You don't want things, you know, being taken away. But what I'm surprised is, if I ask
my phone back, give my fucking phone back. So I can
right. There's what's surprising me is, you know, people saying that consent was an issue. People saying that other people jumped in and participated without them knowing. You know, that's what's bringing me pause.
Like, you're forcing people to take coke and Molly. Like, my thing is, again, if I ain't never take coke a day in my life. And my entry fee to this fiasco is me taking coke. I don't give a fuck who on the other side of that motherfucker. And so many girls like, I didn't want to do it. But because I'm saying I don't want to do it, now Tiny wants to fight me. See, I'm the type of motherfucker, and this is probably why I don't find myself in these situations. And not saying that it can't happen to me, right? But you know, I be hella cautious any fucking way about certain shit. Like, there's no amount of money. I don't give a fuck. Like, and there's some celebrities, I'm like, yo, I knocked them down with zero hesitation. But not to the point of that extent. But when you see the age of these girls, you see how it so could easily happen. Because 20-year-old Tristan, it could have easily happened to 20-year-old Tristan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Easily, I mean, there's
zero hesitation.
Yeah, I mean, there has to be a level of them being naive, right?
So absolutely. There and you're, and again, this is, again, you taking advantage, because Tiny and Ti, these motherfuckers in their 40s. So you're taking advantage of these young, naive girls who are, one, they look up to you. They're happy to be in your presence. And then two, like you said, they kind of fresh out the house. They not really been in them streets long enough to really know how or to read a certain room a certain way. Like I said, 20-year-old Tristan, this could have easily happened to 20-year-old Tristan. Now, 37-year-old Tristan, first of all, I like to go to bed at a certain time. So if we partying after 9, I can't come any goddamn.
That part need to be at 5 p.m.
Listen, this need to be a brunch, okay, for me to show up. We not brunching?
I'm sick of you. Oh, I'm sick of you.
I'm sorry.
A party. It's after 9. We party?
Yeah, this must be a day party, because Tristan ain't coming. But like I said, it could easily happen to a younger version of me, because you have a different mindset, and you always, like, we always teach our girls, like, watch your drink and, you know, do this, but we don't really properly teach them how to deal with coercion.
That's facts. That's
something we need to be more mindful of when educating our girls. It's like, we got to teach them. We teach them how to deal with blatant certain situations. If someone puts something in your drink, or if you're in a situation and have the buddy system, go to the bathroom, whatever, whatever, whatever. Like, we teach them. But when you're in a situation like that, that's very rare to be in to begin with. We don't teach them about stuff like that. And we got to do better at teaching them how to deal with coercion, how to be able to spot it. Because it's not always easy until after the fact sometimes.
No, that's true, though. You make a great point, because the more concealed, right, the more concealed versions of seduction. So it's that often I work with, you know, the younger kids. They work at the store and everything like that. And it's so funny to see them be wide-eyed when a celebrity is present at the party they were at. You get what I mean? Mm. And I see that same wide-eyedness happening, right? If you're invited to a hotel room or an after party. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's, I was kinda just telling you about Cam Newton and how, right, I'm over there drooling at the mouth and shit.
Right. It's just like, you're just so happy to be here. Does that make sense? You're just so happy to be, yeah, here. And it turns into, honestly, like adult peer pressure, right? The power dynamics kind of shift. So you then in turn want to be accepted, want to be cool, you know, want to be around these people of influence and power, social power. Mm-hmm. But yet it comes at a cost, right? There it comes at a cost. So, and it's unfortunate that these young ladies often are willing to pay that cost. Right. And it's even more unfortunate where sometimes they don't even get the opportunity to make that informed decision. You know, and it's just really sad, though. It's just really sad that informed consent anyway, is being questioned in what's going on with T.I. and Tiny. And, you know, it's just really sad, given that we hold them at a pedestal to where they should be for our people. They should be against anything like that. And I'm not saying that they are, but what I am saying is there is questions being asked. There is doubt in the air, and they have to answer to that. They really have to answer to that. So, listen, you know,
I'm ready for all this stuff, because as my nana say, everything come out in the wash, baby. Everything come out in the wash. Is it, you can only be a piece of shit for so long before you're exposed. Everything, yeah, comes out in the fucking wash. And it gets to a point, like I said, I can't even say I'm surprised. I think it saddens me more that, you know, again, they're saying Tiny was the one recruiting these girls, and Tiny was the one. And I'm just like, girl, ew. Like, bitch, you got daughters, my nigga. I have a daughter. If my daughter, and then the sad part is, most times when things like this happen to the victims, it's very rare they tell people, because they're so embarrassed that it actually happened to them. And like, you kind of keep it to yourself. And that's why I say, like, that's why the whole Me Too movement, you see all this shit and it's just like, damn, that happened to you too? Like, these women standing alone, but you don't realize how not alone you are until people start to speak up.
No, yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. And not only even that, too. Also, you're scared no one's going to believe you, right? So just that whole social power dynamic, yeah, right? So you don't have the power or clout to stand toe-to-toe with these juggernauts. So there's that as well, too. Like, who's going to believe me anyway? So there's a lot that definitely goes into it. And I'm with you. Like, it's just, for me, it is sad. I'm not here accusing anything yet, but what I will say is that it is sad that consent is a question, and for consent to be a question, that to me is something that needs to be answered. You have to atone to that. You have to atone for that, and you have to make it clear as to what happened. And what's unfortunate is you're gonna have to open a little more of your door to of your closet. You know what I'm saying? For you to really atone to why consent is an issue and everything like that. So, and say, you know, that's,
can't be lying.
Right. That's where the rub comes at, right? So it's like, how much of that side do you want to reveal to clear your name and blah, 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 blah. So that is wild. That is wild.
It's fuck, right? And then even if we remove the whole sexual situation, right? Which we can't, but even if we do, T.I., why the fuck you out here trying to thug out women and pull guns out on them and shit? Like, see, and that's why I'm like, I'd be so happy I don't be in that kind of situation. Because I'm like, in my brain, I'm sizing you up, bruh. And in my brain, we're going to be in this bitch rumbling, like, in my brain. Because unless you like 6'6", I'm like, nah, you kind of bite-sized, T.I. Come on, bruh. But that's probably why he's pulling out guns and shit.
Well, I would say is, though, he doesn't discriminate on who he's pulling guns out, though. But it is troubling, though, that he does pull out guns on females. So, but I didn't know that was a
fucking catfight, my nigga. Like, bro, get some business. Get some better shit to do. Go, motherfucking pull this same shit on niggas. Because I don't never hear about him running up on niggas. Ever. And if he do, he got a whole gang of niggas behind
him. That's what I'm saying. He's not by himself.
At all.
He's run up on some niggas. I've heard those stories.
You got a whole bunch of dudes behind you, bro. It's like, yo, to me, again, being from where we're from, I can't respect it. I'm sorry.
So here's what I'm saying. I don't respect it at all. For me, I just want it to be clear for what it is. The problem is you're stepping in, putting a gun to this female's head, and you also have, from what we're hearing, a history of, you know, basically trying to overpower and get physical with females. That's, to me, troubling within itself. But I'm not going to sit here and lie and also say that you won't handle some niggas too at the end of the day too. What I'm saying is, and what you're saying is too, is you shouldn't be in the mix with ladies as well. You know what I'm saying?
Now, like, my thing is this. Here's my thing, and I'll be real with you. Nigga, if you about that shit, put the fucking gun down and throw the fucking hands. Like, if you really, like, cause I'm saying, if some women out here that'll give you a go, you know what I'm saying? If you really about that shit, motherfucker, throw them, cause I had yet to hear that nigga, that little baby and all them niggas, the baby, that nigga throw hands all day.
Yeah. All
day. So I'm like, T.I., bruh, like, if you really about that shit, T.I. reckless too, but if you really about this shit, nigga, throw the hands, bruh.
That doesn't make it any better. It doesn't make it
any better. But at the end of the day, you coming in on some thugging out shit, and it's just like, I don't know. I just don't respect it. Like, if you really gonna run up on me as a man, and you come off the jump pulling a gun out on me, and I'm out here really wrecking with my hands, it's like, bro, come on. Now either stay the fuck out of it, or you throw hands too, or don't be mad when a bitch shoots your ass.
But that's, I mean, I get it. But like, for me though, I do want to dispel that, because I think people often, because it's unfortunate, but there's some dudes who will thug out a lady and thug out a man too. But what I'm saying is, thugging out a lady shouldn't be in your repertoire. Like, that shouldn't be in
that's no street cred for me.
Yeah, that shouldn't be in your bag of thuggitude.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you get no stripes off that shit. And this is coming from a female who dealt with niggas who try to put their hands on me.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, and they found out very quickly that shit ain't gonna go how you think it's gonna go. Because I'm the type of motherfucking nigga, listen, you ought to kill me in this bitch. Period, point blank. Like,
that's what I'm saying. Like, it shouldn't be a part of your repertoire. But I also want to dispel that myth as well too. So just because there's dude out there who thug anybody, and it's unfortunate. Like, I don't want it to be like, so just because he's thugging out a female, like, any random dude could run up on him either. What I'm saying is, for him to thug out a female, that's definitely weak of him, right? It definitely shows some weakness, some insecurities, some things he needs to kind of get a handle on as well.
Because that
should not even be an issue, right?
That's like me going around slapping kids and shit.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, those are two different things. You shouldn't be dealing with that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's the clear and present issue right there. And from what you're saying and from what you're seeing, that seems to be something that's habitual or underlying theme in his story.
That's why God be like, Tristan, stay in the house, because you're gonna run up on the wrong nigga. And like I said, it's like, it's too many men nowadays who are getting real comfortable being bitches. And it's like, bruh, don't get mad when your ass, and then here's the thing. Again, and this is my last point. Where we're from, when you pull out the strap, you better be ready to motherfucking fire. So why are you pulling out guns but you ain't shooting nobody? That's what I'm not understanding. It's like when you ready, because now it's like one day somebody gonna call your bluff. Because now you've been known to just pull out your gun for fun, for play. So I'm like, again, where we're from, when you pull out your fucking gun, you need to be ready to shoot that motherfucker. Like, you it's don't pull down. Out your gun and pull that trigger. So, again, why are you out here so readily pulling out your shit? For what? See, it's that caliber of women you kick it with, though. Because the motherfucking bitches I kick it with, like, oh, nigga, you better pull that trigger. Because soon that gun go up. Nigga, I'm on your ass.
Yeah. And ultimately, though, it's also kind of a... it shows a kind of power. Like I need to feel that sense. And for me, it's it's daunting to feel that you have to go to that length to feel powerful in that room. You get what I mean? And that's right. What it is to me. But that's what's disturbing to me. So that's the length you're willing to go to, you know, to exert your power and your stronghold on the situation when, you know, come on, man. There's so many other ways. Other just don't ways. Deal. That doesn't make you less of a man either.
But
like,
that's what you got security for.
Yeah. That part too.
That's why I can never be famous, because I ain't doing shit. Security.
I ain't got time for it.
Right, security. I ain't about to fuck up my nail security. Like,
but I'd never stay famous because I don't get in situations like that.
Yeah, so I would never be relevant because I'm always in the house.
Yeah, I'd never be relevant because, like, even like when you see these videos of people yelling, going back and forth, you know me, I ain't got the time.
You don't be. You be like, I don't think I've ever heard you even raise your voice.
Hey, I'm about to raise my voice.
You be like, nah. Hey.
No, I'm good. You got it. You need this. Like, in my head, I was gonna say, you need this. Like, so you need that. I'll give it to you because I don't. Like, I'm still gonna be me. Nothing's gonna change. Ah, you know. So, I don't know. Like, people are built different. So I don't know. That's
very much so. But I'll be with the shits, baby.
I know you're about.
As I get older, I'm trying to like reduce the amount of times I'll be with the shits. With the shits, man, woman, child, cat, fish, dog. Like, it's like I said, it's many a niggas who thought that, oh, because I'm bigger than her and I'm stronger than her, I can put my hands on her. Okay, right. Nigga. Now, you might kick my ass, but what you better realize is Tristan ain't scared of getting the ass kicked. So, let's go, motherfucker.
I can take a hit.
Nigga, and keep on motherfucking ticking. Let's go, right. Nigga. I eat that shit. Lord, still working on me.
He working on you. Everybody pray for Tristan, please. Pray for Tristan.
Please, Lord. That's why I stay in the house, though, because I know I'm still working on myself.
Amen. Amen. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Hans and Tristan podcast. We're back. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. As always, you can listen to the Hans and Tristan podcast wherever podcasts are heard, streamed, or downloaded. So you have no excuse. Hit us up on our social media. We're on IG as the Hans and Tristan podcast. We're also on YouTube. So hit up our YouTube page, the Hans and Tristan podcast, see our lovely faces, and you get the same content as well. So please subscribe, like, let us know how you guys are feeling about our show. We love to hear the feedback. Thank you so much, and we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.